Hello again, and welcome to yet another episode of the Retro Rides podcast. You got myself, Chaz.
And myself, Tommy Overdrive.
How are we? Are we all good?
Yeah, on the whole, not too bad. Not too bad. Good week?
Well, we always start off with what we've been doing during the week, and my weekend last week started off with my BMW, the E91325D, impersonating the head gasket had gone.
Oh, Christ, that's the daily driver, yeah.
This is the daily driver, yeah. Oh, I think God. I sent you the video, and a couple of you on social media would have seen, my car doing its best example of being a kettle.
Nice.
But yeah, it's basically EGR cooler had gone, was chucking coolant into the exhaust,
well,
which is just what you want.
At least it's not the head gasket.
I suppose there's that, but also it could not have been £300 for a new EGR cooler.
Oh, is that how much they are?
Well... Chinesian ones are £170, but
yeah,
generally they form a pinhole. The last thing I want is for it to form a huge hole and to cause, I don't know, bigger problems with the turbo and that kind of stuff.
It's not a small job. I mean, I've had an F30 BM and it was doing the BMW thing with EGR things, and I actually managed to get away just cleaning mine out, but it wasn't a small job.
Oh no, the EGR is quite simple on mine. Just sits on top of the engine, but the cooler, it's wrapped around quite awkwardly because it's got the pipe that's part of it as well. So the pipe goes to the exhaust manifold. The cooler then runs along the front of the engine, which, because I wanted the six-cylinder one, because why would he have a four-cylinder BMW? Sorry, four-cylinder BMW folk.
I'm just going to interject there. You'd have a four-cylinder diesel, because why would you have a six-cylinder diesel and not the six-cylinder petrol?
Ooh, that's a very good question. You see, I'm going to make two exceptions to the rule here. The six cylinder diesels have, I don't know, they got a bit of a magic about them. I think that's only my opinion. And also the four cylinder petrols, I'll give a few exceptions. Older BMWs, because 2002s are cool as hell. Same for E21s, E30 M3s, and of course the E33 IS. That was quite a cool thing.
Yeah. Also, we should point out the first iteration of M3 was a four banger too.
Oh, God, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm slowly falling onto my own sword, but I still maintain. But I still maintain six cylinders are nothing these days.
Yeah, true.
From a certain point on. So, yeah, that was my week. And I also bought myself a battery charger for my motorbike.
Ah, this is the Yamaha. So, wait a minute. What can
it
I tell
is the
you?
Yamaha.
So, why would you not have a charger?
I do have a charger, but it's gone on the blink a bit. It was a hand-me-down charger, and yeah, it's just started doing a couple of funny things. I suppose it's a 10-year-old charger. It was good whilst it lasted with me, but I'd have to shell out some of my own dough for a new one.
Yeah, because I think new bikes are they lithium yet? Have they went to lithium?
They are lithium now. Mine isn't a lithium, but it does have the right size battery, but the wrong capacity.
Ah.
So it should have a UASA in it, which is about, I think, 8 or 9 amp hours and 190 cold cranking amps. It does not have one of those. It's got a power line from Tainer Batteries, which is 7 amp hours and 135 cold cranking amps.
Splitting hairs, but I'm supposing, and something as small as that is going to make a difference, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm going to be honest, if I leave the charger off for a week in the winter, it does struggle to start. It's just a bit slower. You do sometimes wonder if it's not going to... catch, because it goes duh, 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 and then it fires up, but it never refuses to start on the first time. But you do notice it's a little bit slower, and I'm guessing a 30% drop in cold cranking capacity is probably going to do that in the cold months.
Yeah, very well.
Unless you keep it topped up. So yeah, that was my week. Expensive, especially on a Friday when you're looking forward to the weekend, and the car's like, ha ha ha, I've got a plan for your weekend.
It's going to involve a very empty wallet. That sucks, not having a good way to spend money on nice things for cars. But I will punctuate that with the other side of the field. I actually have that no time to even think about spending time in cars. So, as you know, I have been doing a debt corrector series on my YouTube channel, toolsandtrack.com. And this basically started out because I owed somebody a favor. So to correct the debt, I fixed their car. And it kind of snowballed from there, and the name sort of stuck. So any sort of debt corrector thing for me is when I'm fixing somebody else's car. So most recently, we did an R33 Skyline. Calm down, boys. It's just the GTST. But it was a silver pair, which, as anyone who knows old Skylings, became most of the car repair. So that was Rust Hell number one, and it really knocked the wind out of me. It was such a massive thing. I got three episodes out of it, to be fair, so it was a content mine. But I was like, nah, I'm done with welding. So naturally, for somebody who's done with welding, the deck connector's back, and this time it's a Triumph Spitfire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
This Spitfire sounds good. I think you mentioned this previously, you did. This just needed sills, right?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, okay, let me punctuate. I was informed by the owner that it needed sills. What I was not informed was that it had lived under a tarpaulin outside for 10 years.
but you know what that's going to mean. You get your easy start, you get a file for your points, you chuck a bit of start your bastard down the carb, you dust off the plugs a bit, and boom, it fires right up, just like that.
That's exactly what hasn't happened. So as a result, we've escalated. But listen, I won't get into this here. That's a subject for my own channel, toesandtrack.com. But it's needless to say, all of my week has been involved with that. But whilst driving to one of these expeditions, I had my lovely little retro daily that I was discussing before, my MX-5. I had the roof off. Life was glorious. But I was stuck in traffic. And about 200 yards ahead, I saw a recovery truck. And on the back of it was what looked to me like a car I used to own. Now, this might seem like a bit of a tenuous story, but the car I used to own was a Mazda RX-3. Now, those are quite unique at the best of times. The one I used to own was an early series, and it was a coupe. So what that meant was it had very distinctive round rear lights. If you think about the R32 Skyline, but three lights on each side, that's the sort of thing. So mine was black, vinyl roof, had those lights in the back, box arches from I think it was like an Escort or something, and I'll just kind of whisper under my breath, I had a 3.5 litre V8 in the front, which...
I can see wanker owners listening to this podcast shouting at their recorders going, why would you do that? Why would he put in a Buick reject into one of the thing of Japanese beauty?
What I will say with there is it was like early 2000s and nobody had a clue about those crazy little Dorito.
I think we should also point out, because early 2000s is roughly about when I passed my test. Mm. The classic scene was very different back then.
The entire car scene was very different back then. Bear in mind, the internet barely existed. So any chance of having a rotary that didn't work meant you really had to know somebody, or you really had to know everything. And I didn't have either of those, but I did have a little coupe Japanese car with Dodge Charger styling, a thumping great V8 in the front of it, and not much else going for it. But nonetheless, this car eventually got sold. So it got sold to various people, and then I was lucky enough to actually find out where it went. So there was a company in England Shire somewhere called RE Works, for Rotary Engine Works. They ended up with it. They were going to do a triple rotor conversion on it, I think. Now, the reason for that being, it was, let's be honest, very bastardized to get a 3.5 litre V8 in it. So there wasn't...
You mean reciprocating saws, angle grinders, hammers, none of that was used. The engine was beautifully crafted in, and it fitted just like a glove.
Slotted in like Cinderella slipper. No, absolutely. I don't even think they used an angle grinder. It was pretty much entirely hammers this thing was put in with. So believe me, it wasn't one of these cars that was like, I can't believe you did that to an RX-D. It was a dog. But anyway, the long story. So I was driving in the traffic and I saw the black coupe, vinyl roof, three round lights, and I was like, surely not. So I did the thing. I dropped a cog, pulled some illegal manoeuvres, and got up behind this recovery truck. What it was a Mark 1 Capri, which from a distance I can be forgiven, bearing in mind that the owner of whatever the owner of this car was had bastardised the back lights in this Capri and put these three round light things in. But you know, that way where I was like, it's just a Capri. And then I thought, but it's a really nice Capri. I wonder. And then you go home, you sit in the toilet, you think, I wonder what Mark 1 Capris go for. And you start this big sort of spiral into doom because they actually go for eight times as much as they used to go for. And you just feel miserable.
There's a term for this. I think it's the search of disappointment.
Yeah, I'm glad I was sitting in the toilet. But
Toilet browsing is the best browsing.
it's great. You do some proper dreaming. But nonetheless, I'm not buying a Mark 1 Capri. But it led me to think, what was that strange feeling I got when I did that cog drop and chased this car? Because I knew it wouldn't be it, but I just couldn't let it go. And I realized, do you know what it was? It was like seeing an ex that had a really ropey breakup with you. That's about the only way I can describe that. That heart-wrenching, gut-churning, oh my God, is that hard feeling?
You careful, you're gonna careful with feelings like this, but I know exactly where you're coming from. I think a lot of us have been there. You're gonna need a defib machine next time you go past a car. They go, shit, shit, it's one of my own. No.
I think I need a defib machine just to get through the weekend with the kind of week I've had.
We are hitting that time, aren't we?
Tell me about it. But listen, enough of the both of our woes. We've got a purpose here. We've got a task to complete. On the last podcast, we pulled out three criterias and each of our best picks for cars that fit that criteria. Now, that was quite interesting. And I thought what would be quite good this week is if we actually recap and see what's happened to these cars, much in the same way as I recapped and tried to work out what happened to an RXZ that I should never have sold. So, I don't know if you can remember the criteria, but I've actually got them flagged up here. So what the criteria was, we started with future investments. Now we had a vastly different array of cars for this, if I remember rightly, Chaz. What was it you
We,
picked up for that?
I picked up the left field and quirky Citroen C6.
Okay, so who wants to place a bet? Let's have a look and see what has happened to this Citroen C6.
I think I know exactly what's happened.
Nobody has bought it.
People are missing out on the magnificence of such a quirky yet left field and uber comfortable and uber cool executive car.
I am so stunned that nobody has bought a 2.7 litre diesel V6 Citroën from 2008 for £5,000. But nonetheless, this poor lump is still sat there. Nobody has actually went, oh, that podcast was really interesting. I'm going to go chase that car down. I wonder why.
Oh, I'm sure it's nothing to do with the fact that it's Citroen Electrics, and at the height of electrics, that Citroen's probably dabbled with the engines that, the crank snap as soon as you say the word crankshaft. I'm sure it's nothing to do with any of those, or the fact the tires cost the price of Mer.
No,
Tire for my M3 is the same price as one for a C6.
you've
I'm
got to be
sure it's,
joking. Really?
but you know what? You can't put a price on magnificence,
Well, clearly
or
you can't.
overlooking.
No, you
But
can't put
yes.
a price on selling such a thing either. So
No, you can't.
that is still available. But the suggestion I had was that it's actually set a few things on fire, to be quite honest, because ever since that, I have had no end of people contacting me going, have you bought it? Because I suggested a Aston Martin DB7. So this was the straight six version, the terrible straight six version, if I'm being honest.
Hey, AJ16 lump from Jaguar. Very good engine.
Well, yeah, it's a
I would
good
be
engine.
biased though.
Yeah, of course. But the crux to this was it's not really a good engine for what is an Aston Martin DB7. So nonetheless, it was sitting at around about the £8,000 bracket and it sold. Somebody bought it. Everyone has thought I did.
I thought I was wondering if you did. I was wondering if you never know. You could be like this. You could be keeping it quiet and surprising us in a couple of weeks' time, going,
Well,
you know that Aston Martin that sold and I said it didn't buy? Well, I've got something for you. It took a few weeks for it to arrive, but here it is.
seeing as I were on the podcast, I started it all, and seeing as how I like to drop some bombs, do you want to know who bought that Aston Martin?
Hit me.
Somebody else, wasn't me.
God, that is such a fall down. God, you had me for a second. It's like, I actually know somebody who bought it. It was Mystery Machine. Bruce Holder bought it to keep his other one good, but yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that would have been quite something.
Somebody has bought it, but it certainly wasn't me. That those brave pals and I have made some stupid decisions in the past, but that is definitely not going to be one of them. But an interesting side note, just while we're on this, that seller is a car dealership, and just totally aside, not that it's got any merit to anything, they have some really interesting cars here. I don't know if you had a
Oh, they
chance to
do.
look.
They've got a C5 Corvette. They've got an Audi 80 Cabrio early 90s, which they seem to be coming back in vogue. Yeah, a couple of 129s, Jag Mark II. Quite, and they've also got a Triumph Thruxton bike. I'll stop going on about bikes. This is retro rides.
But it's one retro car, Chaz, that I thought of all of the cars in that guy's fleet you'd have picked up on, and you've not raised it yet.
Oh, I know what the one you're talking about, the BMW E3.
It's what a machine. Oh, my.
That is gorgeous.
We'll drop a link in the comment section for the podcast, but it's giving me...
Be still my beating heart.
It's really nice.
I reckon that's better than the Trans Am. I'm going to go there.
It's a 5-door, which is the only real letdown with it. That and the fact that it's £30,000 nearly, but oh, it's so pretty.
That's true. But 5-door, it means you can take your mates to the pub.
Exactly. That's it. And you will have lots of mates if you have an E3 BMW. So, yeah. But
oh, God.
I don't know.
You'll be short of them.
You will need mates to fix it. Let's be honest, though. If this is a challenge, I think I won that round, mate. The car that I thought would be the investment has been sold.
You're right. But on either hand, Jag Mark IIs didn't used to sell, and they sold. So who knows? But yeah, I'll give you that one.
Okay, so what was our other criteria? We had future retro as an idea there as well. Now, we were very, very close to the line with each other.
I actually can't believe we picked near enough the same car, but with a different frock.
That's correct. So, for reference, the Golf R32 Mark IV that you suggested is sold.
It sold very quickly, actually. I was surprised it went that fast. I honestly thought the terrible MPG... VR6s have a good... They've got a good reputation for the sound, but they do have reputations for chains going, bores ovaling, little things. But yeah, it's still...
mere slight reliability issues, yeah.
Yeah, but it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah. Do you know, interestingly, this is a tiebreaker because I also suggested a DSG Audi TT with the exact same engine in it, and that was on eBay. Both of these have long since expired, so there's clearly a demand for the R32 lumped engines and the VAG stuff.
Well, you're not going to get another one, are you? I don't think VW are going to make one again. I think the emissions have seen an end to that. At least one without a turbo they won't make, I can't see.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame. But listen, it could be if there's ever a top tip to take from this, go get yourself an R32 engine Volkswagen. They sell well and they seem to make money.
Oh, absolutely. But then in a contrast to that, we then looked at retro dailies.
That's right,
And your Corolla, yeah, I think a couple of people probably thought it was a little steep on the money, but it's gone, hasn't it? It's sold.
I'll be honest, I was a bit optimistic picking that Corolla. It was a retro daily. We agreed a budget between us of £5,000, and I thought that Corolla is really steeping into the top end of that budget. Yeah, somebody bought it.
Yeah, but I've noticed that decent low mileage noughties cars, they do seem to sell. So a friend of mine had a Toyota, I think it was a Corolla that he had, 50,000 miles, 57 plate, full history, dealer history, put it for $2,500, and I think he was expecting to take a little less, and the phone just rang off the hook. He just could not put the phone down quick enough.
Surprising, isn't it? But it just goes to show, I think we're kind of getting into a bit of another one of these 80s classic revolutions here, where people are just putting silly values on old Jap Tim.
They are, and people are buying them, whether they don't like the stuff that's been out in the last decade, or it's the fact that it's that might be units compliant, actually, that car, or they just want something simple and frivolous. I think that may be it.
On the subject of neither simple nor frivolous, your suggestion for the Retro Daily was the ST200 Mondeo Estate,
which is gone. That's also gone, and that was sold by Mondeo Center, oddly enough.
I'm going to be honest, without being cheeky, I'm quite surprised that that sold up. Especially not being because it's a Mondeo Estate, but because it was on Car and Classic. Now, if anyone is familiar with the platforms to sell your car on, Car and Classic tends to have cracked those like peak Concours, high value, proper classic cars. I didn't think that was the kind of place a Mondeo ST200 would be A, listed, and B, sold on. But
that's very true. But on the other hand, bear in mind two things here. I fully agree with you there, though, which is that Johnny Smith hosts it, and also so does Johnny Smith, who is, God, what's his show called? It's not Smith and Smith. It's Late Break Show.
Yeah, out of the two options, I would not have went for Smith and Smith.
No, that's the podcast that him and Richard Porter do.
I see. Yes, that's great.
Yes. But yeah, the Late Break Show, he's sponsored by them, and our very own Chris Pollitt. I think he's a writer and a video maker for them as well. So yeah, they've
Interesting.
got cheap origins, but yeah, despite that, I do agree. They are basically high-end stuff, which comes on to our last criteria, doesn't it?
Yes, because we've hit another draw here, so this kind of gets back to the highly unlikely have their dream cars sold. So we're gonna I haven't even looked at these yet, so it's between your Mercedes 300 SL Gullwing and my D Tommaso Pantera. So we'll start on your Gullwing, shall we?
Yes, that's still a POA, I think, to be honest with that person. I don't think they care if it sells. And to
They've
be honest,
probably got
if I owned one,
their
I
insurance
wouldn't care
reasons.
if it sold.
So yeah, POA still listed. So that's going to be there a while. I agree. As for the Di Tommaso, it's also still there. Although £158,000, I've not been able to scrape enough down the back of the couch for it either. So that's not a shock.
I'll tell you what, we'll do a collective retro rides by. I'll sell everything I've got, you sell everything you've got, and we'll still be short.
By, I would say 2/3.
Hey, the aspiration's there.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think we should probably come back and revisit this. We'll maybe give it a few weeks just to let the opportunities refresh, shall we say. But no, that was an interesting delve. So
It
that,
was.
yeah, it was. It gave me food for thought though, because these are actually quite, I don't think there was a single one in Scotland. So they were all going to involve a bit of a road trip to go and collect if that was the car I went for. And I'll stipulate Wolverhampton was where my last retro daily came from. So I was kind of pondering this a wee while ago. I did the collection for the MX-5 over 2 days because, one, it was an excuse for me to take my partner and we had a weekend away. And two, because I'm just too bloody old to do single shift journeys like that anymore. It's just painful. It's a lot of time to spend in a car. But it gave me food for thought because I actually don't think I've asked you this before. What has been your longest single shift retro journey?
This depends. Before I answer, can it involve other people in the car, or does it have to be me and me alone?
Let's look at both and see if they kind of fit the
Okay,
criteria.
okay, okay. So longest one as an individual level from basically myself. It's me going to buy on two occasions because I am that crazy. I first went with, it's a similar distance for both. Went with my dad in 2004 to go and pick up a 2000 Mark II Mondeo. It would be a Mondeo, wouldn't it?
That would be.
1.8 TD GLX, which as people know from a thread that I got on my older cars, was only clocked three times after we sold it. We left early in the morning, caught the train from Warwick, went all the way up, and then we drove it all the way back. And I enjoyed that so much that I did it again in 2011, this time to go and pick up a 106 GTI with four part worns all round, a couple of them misshaped, a couple of them over 12 years old, overheating in the snow because, well, because yeah, the heating system wasn't bled out because Peugeot heating systems can be all to bleed out if you don't know what you're doing. And for those who have driven a 106 or AX based PSA car, you'll know the pedal position is crap. So with no heaters, fan kicking in quite a lot of the time. Yeah, that was quite a long trip back from Edinburgh back to Warwick. That was, yeah, long.
That's got to be the guts of about 300 miles, isn't it?
Oh, easy.
Okay, well, I'll counter that, seeing as I were talking about buying cars. So I think my longest for an actual retro purchase was from a car that I bought from Retro Rides, believe it or not.
Nice.
So that was Bedford.
Okay, that's quite a way, actually.
Well, I've actually just went and Google mapped it. I knew it was a distance, 370 miles.
Wow.
And that was on a single shift. So the way I did break that one up, though, I got an EasyJet flight down to Luton. Is it Luton that's the one that's closest to Bedford? Not
Yeah,
sure.
Luton's very close. London, Luton.
That's the one. So the which actually now makes me think it's even further because I collected the car from Luton Airport, drove the seller back to his house, and then started my merry journey home. The bit that's quite amusing is that it was a Nissan Silvia S12. And I paid, wait for it, I did 370 miles in a car that I paid £200 for.
Hey, this That's faith. That's faith. But you know, I've done a similar thing, which goes on to the where you gave me the two choices for my question about which one it was. So, in 2006, myself and four other guys, we bought a 260-pound Volvo 740 SE with 91,000 miles on the clock, and it had it's 260 quid, a 12-month ticket. The clutch on it was higher than Bob Marley. It definitely did not chirp when you fully brought in the clutch, but somehow that clutch didn't slip. So I don't know, maybe the car was just, you know, teasing us. Anyway, we thought no servicing, no nothing, no shame. But the car actually have a fantastic history, to be fair. What better thing to do than to drive a car from Rugby, not stop in Paris, but contend with Parisian traffic and go all the way to Benidorm in one hit?
Benidorm? Good God. Why Benidorm?
Why wouldn't you do that? You know, it's got everything. It's got bars, it's got razzmatazz, it's got scattiness. You know, there's no shame, there's no honor there. It's like, it's what you want. It's like the car dealer destination of holidays.
I'm actually Googling that right now to see the distance involved. I think you might have beat me for my next story, because that is 2,000 kilometers from ballpark London, shall we say.
Yes, we were flagging so much that when a couple of us started like veering across the road, bear in mind this was a summer in a car with no air conditioning, so it was warm in the car. It probably smelled quite rancid looking back, but yeah, we'll skip that point. But yeah, I think we stopped off to Kip near Barcelona for about half an hour, because it was just getting a bit much, because all we were doing was switching drivers, filling up the car, and just carrying on and on. But yeah,
God.
We slept very well when we got there, though. But yeah, I've not done that again.
Okay, so I've got my last chance of beating you here, right? Me and a bunch of friends had between us three Toyota MR2s, and one summer it was actually for one of my friends' stag parties, we decided to do a Euro trip. So between five of us in three cars, we toured all of Europe, did the Nürburgring, did the Stelvio Pass, hit Italy, and on the last night in Europe, we were staying in Chamonix, except we didn't know it was the last night. It was the last 24-hour window for us to get the Channel Tunnel home. Now, we got suitably smashed in Chamonix, which is basically the southeast of France, Switzerland. It's near Switzerland. Anyway, absolutely rat-arsed. Next morning, woke up pretty bleary-eyed, and we thought, oh, wait, these tickets for the Channel Tunnel run out tonight. So we did what any responsible young adult at that time does. Three of us promptly piled into the cars and made a break for the border. So we whistle-topped the entirety of France from 8 o'clock until 11 o'clock at night. So we basically got on the last train just and no more. And to prove why that was quite a feat, one of the MR2's gearboxes exploded.
Oh.
It rains. So what had to happen there was he limped the car with a push into fourth gear, which is all I had left, and drove from Reims to the Channel Tunnel in fourth. We promptly arrived there and thought, what do we do now? So doing what any responsible bunch of people in three MR2s, we put him in the middle and shunted him through like a freight train through passport control onto the train. So his end was running and there was a car behind him just bumping him on. They would raise an eyebrow. The reason for all of that being he didn't have AA cover until he was in the UK. So he was promptly left off the other side at Felixstowe, the other end of the Channel Tunnel. And we then decided between two cars, what do we do now? Well, it's midnight and we're in the UK. Let's just drive home. So we went from Chamonix at 8 in the morning to Glasgow, which by the time we got to Carlisle, it was ropey. It was 5 in the morning and really, really ropey. But I always thought that was quite an impressive feat. But as we wrap up towards the end of this podcast, you've beaten me, Chaz. It was only 1,100 miles in one shift.
Ah, yes. But I don't think we'd do it again, to be honest. I think we'd just take the break and take the hit, wouldn't we? I think
Premier Inn has come a long way in those times.
Oh, God, it is. I mean, You talking about getting some Aston Chamay and then coming back reminds me of when I went to Nürburgring on my birthday about 6 years ago. So I went on one of the destination Nürburgring chip days, and yeah, we all got suitably destroyed in the Crown, which is a bar in Adenau. And I woke up late. One retro rider will record the story, retro work, because he was there with me. And basically, I came to leave and I was like, shit, I've got 4.5 hours, barely 4 hours, to get to the crossing. So yeah, got myself some Haribos, a bottle of water, and the M3 Speedo definitely did stay at around the 95 mark on the autobahns in the wet. All I'm going to say is, Michelin, you make some bloody good tyres. Thank you for that, for helping me make a boat.
Fantastic. Yes. So I think that's kind of all we've got time for today. But just before we wrap up, this is now our fourth podcast, and we've got quite a number of people that have started following. And to everyone who's tuned in up until now, thank you. We're certainly not done yet, but we are actually going to throw them to the floor. We've started to drop these on YouTube a bit, and we realize that YouTube has the ability for you to leave comments. Similarly, these podcasts are left on Retro Rides, where you can also comment. So we want to get a bit of input from you guys. You know what we're about. You know what we like to talk about. What would you like to hear us talk about next?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you want to hear us talking about what makes a retro, whether diesels are acceptable in retros, music and road trips, or, you know, what makes a good retro, anything goes, or engine swaps, blasphemous in retros, you name it. Yeah.
If you can think about it, we can talk absolute cod shit about it for 30 minutes.
Absolutely. And keep you going for yet another time.
So on that note, we will wrap up here. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks, all. And catch you on the next one.